I can only talk about my own experiences. I can't speak for anyone else. And my experience is that the women loving women sex does go on for ages. So like,
even if you have chronic fatigue?
Yeah, I guess.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty great.
Welcome to Doing It with me, Hannah Witten, where we talk all things sex, relationships, dating, and our bodies. Hello, welcome back to Doing It. Today is a very special episode because the day this episode is published, 12th of May, is ME Awareness Day. And my assistant Megan, who works with me on a lot of the behind the scenes operations here at Doing It podcast with my YouTube channels and newsletter as well, has ME. And so Megan is stepping out from behind the scenes and social media today to come on the podcast and chat with me all about her disability, her sexuality as a lesbian, eating disorders, and how all of those things intersect for her. We talk about what ME is and how it's affected Megan throughout her life, childhood crushes, and how she somehow managed to escape compulsory heterosexuality. Kind of. We get into Megan's experiences with dating and relationships at university, with ME as a lesbian, biphobia in lesbian communities, and we answer your questions about if the lesbian stereotype of sex going on for hours still applies if you have ME, and do orgasms really help with chronic pain? Thank you so much to Megan for joining me for this episode. Definitely check out her Instagram if you like books and gay things. And of course, thanks to Megan in general for working on this podcast with me. The show notes, the transcripts, and social media. I wouldn't be able to do all of this without her. And I also wouldn't be able to do all of this without my patrons. We are slowly making our way to 1,000 patrons. Oh my goodness. And so if you'd like to support this podcast and join our community of sex nerds and help us reach this goal, then please check it out over at patreon.com/Hannah Witten. You get early access and ad-free episodes of this podcast, among lots of other great perks. And if we hit 1,000 patrons, I want to bring a video element to the podcast too, so you'd be helping towards making that a possibility and reaching more people with these conversations, exploring the world of sexuality, relationships, and our bodies. As usual, you can find more info and links to everything that we talked about in this episode in the show notes over at doingitpodcast.co.uk. And please let us know what you think over on our Twitter or Instagram, which is at doingitpodcast. And without further ado, here is the fabulous Megan. Megan, you are long-time listener. First-time guest.
That is true, that is true.
Yeah. For those who don't know, Megan works with me and actually does the show notes and transcripts, the episodes, and the social media, the woman behind it all. It's good to have you on.
It's good. It's good to be on. I'm excited to see what this looks like from this end.
Yeah, you're now experiencing it from like all parts of the process of podcast making now.
Nothing is hidden from me.
Yeah. So we wanted to do this episode together because is it ME Awareness Month or is ME Awareness Day? One of the two.
I think it's ME Awareness Day and also within the month, I think.
Yeah, around the time when this podcast is coming out. It is ME Awareness Day. And you have ME.
I do. I do have ME.
Yeah. So I think a good place to start would be, what is ME?
So ME is hard to define whether you
have it. Does it stand for anything?
Myalgic encephalomyelitis.
Oof.
Which is a fancy way of, as far as I'm aware, saying like parts of your brain get inflamed, I think. It's been a while since I had this explained to me. And then the other word, I used to think there was a difference between the two terms, but it's also known as CFS for chronic fatigue syndrome.
Yeah, because I've heard those two be used interchangeably. Okay, they are the same thing, right?
Yes.
And so, what is it?
It is a chronic illness that people define both as neurological and part of your immune system. So chronic fatigue syndrome is a solid overview, because it's like the best way I can describe it for people who haven't experienced it is like, you know, when you've had a really bad flu, but you're not better enough to actually do anything in the world at all. You're still sort of at the pancake in the bed stage, but you don't have any of the flu symptoms. You just feel like you've been hit by a truck. Mm-hmm. It's just that. Your body just starts doing that.
Is that your kind of like neutral state?
To various degrees. Yeah, like definitely always feels like I'm getting over some, like I've just had a cold, even if I haven't. So the main symptom that you get like checked for when you are being assessed for ME is like post-exertional malaise. So it's, do you get disproportionately tired if you've done even like the smallest amount of effort at something, whether it's physical or mental, like you are.
Oh, that's interesting that it's mental as well.
Yeah. And for ages, because this is my second time in the depths of it, of ME. And so there was sort of a 10-ish year gap, kind of. So when I went back around the second time round for like just confirming and re-diagnosis, a lot of the medical terms had moved on. So this time round, people are saying like, yes, it does, like mental effort also counts. Brothers, before it was very like, it only really counts if you move around.
Yeah. I mean, I feel that as somebody who doesn't have chronic fatigue syndrome, where like you feel mental exertion physically as well. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
So that makes sense that it would also be exacerbated if you had something like ME. And that's also so interesting that you had like a 10 year remission of it. Cause I'm like, yeah, over here with my 10 year remission. And then
I think it was more like 7 thinking about it, but yeah, like a chunk of time.
I'm curious, cause obviously I want to get into like relationships and sex and all of that good stuff, but I'm also really curious about what the impact of that kind of like remission time was in terms of like perspective on everyone. I feel like experiences this stuff differently, but what a word that often comes up for me is like loss and grief. And so when you have experienced being a healthy, in inverted commas, a healthy person, and then when you are no longer a healthy person, did you ever feel that kind of grief for it? And like, also, if you did, how have you tried to like not let that get you down?
Yes, I did. I definitely had that period. I still do sometimes. And it's been, so this like relapse or this time round in the pits of it. Mm-hmm. This started in late 2017. And I'm still sometimes like, it sucks that my body doesn't work. But definitely around when it became clear, like, okay, so I had ME, I was diagnosed with ME at about 15, basically homeschooled myself so that I could get my A-levels and stuff, my GCSEs and my A-levels. And then I went to university, dropped out of university because of ME, went to a different university, much less high academic stress version, and sort of slowly got better during sort of around my like early 20s, 22, 23. And then for like a few years in there, it was, I would say I would still be classed as having ME, but it would only show up for things like, it would be the post-exertion malaise that would be the main thing. Like I would have to just keep an eye on what I was doing. And if I like overdid it some days, I would be like, oh, I just need to like write tomorrow off. Mm-hmm. Just sort of, you know, like if you've moved house or something, or, you know, say taken a lot of boxes to the post office and the next day you're like, my arms are noodles.
Yeah. It would be just like that. Energy management.
Yeah. So it would be more like if I got sick, it would take me a couple of days extra to recover. Or if like I did something outside of my usual realm of like physical activity, I would need some rest. So I was sort of used to that, which was miraculous after like 5 years of essentially being housebound. And then, yeah, around the end of 2017, I became clear that like this time wasn't going to be a just cancel everything for a couple of weeks and wait it out, that it was going to be another like, this is, you're in it for the long haul.
And so that's that word, chronic.
Yeah. So it was really around that point where, yeah, where it was becoming clear to me that it was, this was it. This was it, rather than like something I was going to work through and get back to how I was, that it was then, that it was just, it felt like a setback because I'd had it so severely when I was younger. And now when it came back again properly, I was an adult. It felt like a regression. Like I had to go, like I had to go back to being like 17-year-old me. No one wants to go back to being 17-year-old then.
Yeah. There's so many parallels as well, I think, with our experience, because most of my flare-ups with colitis was when I was a teenager, like a child and a teenager. And then I was an adult when it hit me again.
That was definitely like when I like found your content, it was very like, look, it me, sort of.
It is interesting. I feel like when it comes to chronic illness and disability stuff, everyone I've ever spoken to, like just how unique everyone's experiences are, but then you always do find like relatable aspects of like, oh yeah, that like hospital experience or that like timeline experience. Like, I don't know. I just find it really comforting. And also I love talking about medical shit.
Yeah. Same. I was the kid that was like, I will collect all of the like the horrible histories, but for science, those books.
Ooh, yes. Oh my God.
I was just like, yes, I will learn all of the gross body bits.
So when you had Emmy as a teenager, because like obviously you were experiencing the symptoms before you were diagnosed.
Yeah.
Like how was figuring out your sexuality and being sick? Was that something that, were you even thinking about your sexuality at that point because you were sick?
I feel like when people ask about my sexuality, so I'm a lesbian, for people who don't know. And I never really feel like I had to figure out my sexuality in any way. Like I didn't have really, the only two periods of like, oh, I actually have to think about this was when I first started dating a girl and I was like, wait, I'm going to date a girl and the world is going to see me like dating a girl. Like it's going to be something for other people, not just for me.
That awareness of how like of being watched.
Right, so yeah, so you just sort of have to picture 18-year-old me watching Skins fan vids on loop being like, what if I can never get married?
Oh my goodness, is that like Naomi and Emily?
Yes.
Was it those two?
It was set to Love Story by Taylor Swift. And I watched that a lot of times in the dark, panicking.
Oh. Yeah.
And then I was like, well, there's nothing I can do about it. It's not like I'm going to date a man. So like, I just move on.
So hold on. Is what you're saying that Compet never got you?
Literally never. I describe it as like, I sort of discovered that everyone else wasn't gay. Like, because when you're little, you assume that your experience is universal, right? You assume that everything that you know and are doing and is just what everyone else is doing. Like, if your body does something, you're like, everyone's body does this, because how can it possibly be different? I am the whole world. I knew that I liked girls more than even like as a kid. It wasn't obviously, I didn't know any of the sexual side of it for a while.
I don't know. Like, I had crushes on boys from the age of four. Like knew.
Oh no, I fully knew it was like, yeah, I knew it just wasn't like, you know, at the age of four, I wasn't like, I'm going to think about this like I wasn't connecting it with sex. I was just like,
no,
these are my feelings.
It was just like, they're pretty and I want to spend a lot of time with them and I want to be their friend and maybe hold hands.
I want them to like me best. And like, I just want to look at them all the time.
Yeah, wanting to be their favorite.
Yeah, I just want to be their favorite. So I knew that I liked girls best and that like all my favorite characters were girls. All of the people I wanted to spend time with were girls and that boys were just sort of there. They were, I don't know, like there doing stuff. And then, but because all of the media, especially like, so I grew up in the 90s. So all of the media I was getting was very like, and then you marry a man and you kiss men and like,
did you understand that? If you were so, like, I like girls, surely this is everyone's experience.
Yeah.
Then why are these girls marrying men in the movies?
I assumed, okay, so also I'm autistic, so it could possibly be connected to that. I don't know if I don't know. But like, I assumed that everyone, all the girls, liked girls best. And that this was just an obvious fact that everyone knew and no one talked about.
Heard other people say this.
But they just married men or like dated men because that's what you were supposed to do. So you just said that you liked that while you actually liked girls best. And everyone knew that that was what was everyone was thinking.
Yeah. So I feel like I've heard Elena have that say that she had that experience as well. Of like, but surely, like, we all know that girls are the best.
Yeah.
Surely we all fancy women.
Right, and especially because in, like, primary school, the, like, friendship lines can be so divided, and you're like, ew, boys. And I was at a primary school that was predominantly girls because it was a primary school attached to an all-girl secondary, so it was mostly, it was mixed gender primary and all-girl secondary, so it was mostly girls in the primary school. So I didn't really have a lot of contact with boys, and, like, as like a 5-6-year-old, they're being like, boys are smelly.
Yeah. So then you're like, why would anyone like them?
Yeah. And then sort of around the time where people, they just felt very abrupt to me around like 10 when people were like, oh, I have a crush on boy. And I was like, why? Like, oh my goodness. What is appealing about them? Have you seen boys?
Oh my God. I love it. So I guess when you were like a teenager and experiencing like your ME symptoms at the same time, did like, how did that like play with, I guess, not even not figuring it out, but like figuring other people's sexualities out?
I guess I'd sort of done that bit by the time I got like, because I think that sort of happened properly around like, you know, like year 6, year 7, sort of 11, 12, when people start noticing boys for the first time sort of around you, or like that's what the age group was when it started happening to people that I knew. When it started happening, like, I don't know, like the fog came over them.
I mean, the hormonal fog. It's
the hormonal
real.
Fog where suddenly people think boys are attractive. I know. So I guess I'd sort of done that then. So by the time I was like dealing with being sicker than everyone, as opposed to just like not liking boys, it was more like, I don't know, I feel like I hear a lot of people talk about like, oh, and then they had to really consider like really come to terms with like liking women and what it meant. And for me, that was more like, well, this is always just a concrete fact. So I didn't have to really think about it in terms of connecting with the ME. I was just dealing with the ME because I'm like sort of like, I have brown hair. I like girls, but I have to work on this thing that I don't understand.
Yeah. And then like, imagine if you did have to battle comp hair at the same time as ME. You lucked out somehow.
I really did. It never got me. And I just, it just never got me. And I don't know how, like I was exposed to the same media as everyone else, but I'm just there like, I don't like the boys. And also I don't care.
What an aspiration. Love it. As you got older then, like how did people who you dated react to your ME? Like what kind of obstacles did you come across with dating, especially like dating as in like the activity of it, obviously, is a lot of energy. Like, and even if you don't have a chronic fatigue syndrome, then like people often find dating exhausting.
I think again, it was like, so I first dated someone when I was at university for the first time. Then we were both at Cambridge University, which is sort of a hothouse of like, no one has any time or energy to do anything. There's this idea of like the Cambridge Triangle where you can have two of three things and it's like sleep, good grades, and a social life. And like,
I've heard of the triangle and you can only have two things in lots of other contexts. Yeah.
And that's like, that was the thing that people would say about Cambridge. So it was very like, it was less like the ME was stopping me seeing people. It wasn't like I would say, I can't do this because I'm sick. I would be like, I can't do this because I have like 5 tons of Greek to translate in the next 20 minutes. So it was always about the work rather than the ME. So I guess the only times it would come into play would when someone would be like, you have a free date, like a free afternoon today. The girl I was dating, but you have a free afternoon today. Be like, it looks like I have a free afternoon, but I just stayed up for 21 hours, like with a piece of Latin. So I need to be asleep.
Yeah.
Like, if I don't do that, I can't do anything next week. So that was the main issue. But because everyone else was also running on like so much work in such a short amount of time, in such a high pressure situation, it wasn't as noticeable that I couldn't do as many things because everyone was making sacrifices and choices.
Ooh, yeah, I hadn't thought of it like that. Like it kind of like disguised actually what you were really going through.
Which is also why it took me so long to realize in Cambridge that I was as sick as I was, because the norm around me was like, everyone is exhausted, everyone is overwhelmed. And so I was like, oh, it's just the same. I'm just the same. Everyone is the same.
Oh my God. I mean, if I were to start another podcast, you know, I would do one about like productivity and organization. And there's like whole conversations to be had around like toxic hustle culture and how like ableist is.
It really is. If you want to do an organization podcast, I will fully be your co-host.
Maybe we can make it like a patron only one.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Ideas, making more plans. Another thing that I wanted to talk about with you is also because you have had an eating disorder. I know some people always use the present tense for it, even if they are recovered.
It feels to me like something, currently it feels to me like something I will always use the present tense for, like even though I am significantly more recovered or like along the recovery journey than I was, it still feels very present. It doesn't feel like a past thing.
Yeah. And I guess one thing I was curious about was how the relationship of the eating disorder with ME. I don't know if exercise was ever a part of your eating disorder, but I'm like, but that takes a lot of energy. And then like that would surely impact the ME. And so then you're in this like horrible cycle.
That's it.
Okay.
So peak of the eating disorder was in the part of was it sort of in the ME dip where I was like, I guess, or peak where I was much better. So I was mostly focusing on, I guess my brain was like, oh, you're physically feeling a bit better, time to make that worse. But like it would be they're very often sort of not comorbid in that one provokes the other, but if you have eating disorders are very much about control. And when you have ME, you have very little control about what you can do, when you can do, if you can do something, if you can keep a plan that you've already made. And so eating is a thing you can always control. It's something that you do every day, multiple times, and you can decide not to. I mean, obviously you shouldn't, but like it's something that you can control even when you can't control anything. So I think that's why they sort of play off each other like that. But yeah, as you say, if say you're not eating anything or you are over-exercising, that does not do your body any favors if you are already running on less energy. So yeah, I think I was lucky, but yeah, the worst of the eating disorder happened in the part of my life where I was much more physically healthy than at other points. But I don't know if it would have made a huge difference to me at that point, because literally the only thing I cared about was the eating disorder. It would not have mattered to me what my body felt like.
Yeah. It's so tricky as well, because like when you mentioned that you also had an eating disorder, like my brain was like, well, if you've got a chronic fatigue syndrome, like it kind of made sense to me, because I was like, if your body means that, if what your body is doing means that you have to sit around, and because of the fat phobia in our society,
exactly,
then it, you kind of like, and the toxic hustle culture, all of it, it's all, yeah, like all of it, you feel like lazy for like sitting around and not doing anything. And then there's,
yeah,
you know, we're all drilled with this fear of like, what if you become fat, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Which, like I still honestly find that really difficult to shake. And I know that like a lot of people, especially during the last year with lockdown, all of those fears have definitely like been present in a lot of people's lives.
Oh, for sure. Like I definitely have been like, what if I get lockdown fat? And my wife has been like, one, that's not a thing. It doesn't matter. Your body is your body. And yeah, also your lockdown life is no different from your regular life, because you, apart from like people can't come to see you, like that's basically it. You're fine.
Mm-hmm. Which you can't have visitors.
Yeah, basically it. I feel like sometimes I do feel very much like, you know, in Victorian novels where the women sort of, delicate flowers.
Oh, and you're just sat there reading your book waiting for somebody to come knock on and just be like, hello, I'm here to see you, Miss Megan.
Oh, I've got a caller.
Oh, I love them. Now they just have to be like outside your window throwing pebbles.
So I'm like, you can't come in, you've got the plague.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. Okay, I've got some questions from Instagram. The people were curious about some stuff. Mm-hmm. And they go into the sex stuff as well, which is why I was holding back a bit.
Okay.
Somebody asked, oh, where's the sex question? That was a really good one. Oh, here we go. This is it. Do you find the stereotype that women loving women's sex goes on for hours problematic/ableist?
I saw this. Obviously, I was looking at the question.
You were spying. You were preparing in advance. Spying.
So I can only talk about my own experiences, obviously. I can't speak for anyone else. And my experience is that the women loving women's sex does go on for ages. So like,
even if you have chronic fatigue?
Yeah, I guess.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah, it's pretty great. So for me, it's either I can have sex or I can't have sex. There's not like a middle ground where I'm having sort of some sex. It's either yes or no. And so, yeah, I don't know if it's a problematic or an ableist idea overall, but it is applicable to my life. So I don't know if I'm just a, like, the snowflake in the crowd or if it's... yeah, and I haven't spoken to a lot of my, like, women-loving women friends either.
It's so weird to say that out loud because I'm so used just to seeing WLW written down. And I was like, are you supposed to say it out loud or do we... what do we do?
I fully say Wooloo like the Pokemon.
Okay, there we go. Let's go with that.
And so, you know, the Pokemon just appears every time. I'm like, that feels right. Feels right. Thank you, random Twitter user that I saw that from.
Love it. That's so interesting to me, though, that yours is just like, I either have the spoons or I don't have the spoons.
Because
for me, I'm like, I have the energy to do this kind of sexual activity, but not this kind. And I can, my energy, like, actually, it is a bit more like, pick, like, cherry pick what I'm up for in terms of, like, energy levels.
Yeah, I hear that from other people as well. But I think there was another question somewhere that was like, do you find that sex helps with chronic pain? I would like to register a complaint in that it does not.
Like,
I see there's always that, like, if you're Googling sort of period cramps, natural relief, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
There are so many things and anecdotes and articles saying like, oh, just have an orgasm, like, it'll make you feel better, it relieves the cramps. I'm like, no, it gives me cramps.
Oh, because I guess, like, because it's muscle contracting.
Yeah, I don't
and then
know.
Really, so, yeah, maybe it just, like, triggers it even more for you.
So it's very much like when I'm thinking about, like, can I have sex? It's like, well, if I come, that's the rest of the day.
Oh, that's fascinating.
Right? So it's not even like, it's not about I can do this bit of, like, I can do this activity or this activity. Because generally, it's about, like, yeah, it would be like, if I have an orgasm today, can I continue on with my day or not? Like, it's very binary.
Yeah. That's so interesting. Do you ever then purposefully have sex where you kind of, like, restrict yourself from having an orgasm? Or are you just like, that not worth it then?
That is not possible for me.
Fair enough. Do you know, that's so interesting though, that it doesn't work. Well, for you, it doesn't work as like a pain relief, but also I guess it makes sense that it is also like a big energy spender as well, having an orgasm. But one thing that I discovered after my surgery and having a lot of morphine, the kind of feeling that I would get, because I had a morphine drip where I could like press it every 5 minutes. I was allowed to, the machine let me give myself another hit of morphine.
Minutes.
It was like, self dosaging on morphine. But the feeling that I would get when I'd given myself a lot, because I was in a lot of pain, like it was like drowsiness, but then also like the relief of pain. And it was like this sinking back into the hospital bed feeling, and like my eyes would close and I'd be like woozy. After having experienced that, now when I have an orgasm, it's the same feeling.
That's so cool.
Having an orgasm is like being on morphine. Like, it's, but that's obviously me and my body's experience of it. Because now, if I can't sleep, having a quick wank and having an orgasm really helps me fall asleep, because the morphine helped me fall asleep when I was like in pain in hospital. It's so weird to me. Yeah.
Did it before? Like, if you wanked before you'd had the morphine experience, did it help you sleep?
I don't think I ever really needed it, and I never or I never tried.
Okay.
I never like thought, oh, I can't sleep, I'll have a wank. It was more like having a wank, or like having an orgasm, makes me feel the same as morphine did. Morphine helped me sleep.
Right.
Let me try this to get back to sleep. So definitely, I do think it was like a post-hospital experience thing that I started doing. But yeah, that's interesting that it doesn't, that it's the opposite for you in terms of pain.
Yeah.
Whereas for me, well, actually, I don't know if it relieves pain, because I haven't been in pain and then like tried to have an orgasm. But it does kind of give me that same like woozy, drowsy, sinking into the bed feeling afterwards. Interesting.
It can make me fall asleep though, because I guess my body is like, you're hurting now.
But that's the energy spent. You just spent loads of energy. Yeah. This is a question. I don't know if you want to get into it, but somebody asked, why do some lesbians avoid dating bisexuals?
Oh, because biphobia is rampant everywhere, including circles that you really think it shouldn't be. So I don't know why that is, but I feel weirdly guilty, because the stereotype for like within like the lesbian community or like the wooloo community is that like bi people haven't picked yet. Like, so don't date a bi person, because they could decide they're not bi. Like, they'll suddenly be like, oh, actually just men. not you. And I feel bad about that because part of my sexuality journey, I guess, was even though I knew that I only liked women or that I liked women much more in a completely different way than I've ever been interested in men, I would say that I was bi for years because I thought that you had to like men in some way. So I guess that's where the
comp pet got me. Oh, there we go. You didn't fully escape comp pet.
Yeah, I felt like if I said that I was a lesbian, like people wouldn't take me seriously or like... this is going a bit deep, but like that I was too ugly to say I was a lesbian because I would be like letting the lesbian community down.
Ooh, and that's just another like patriarchal bullshit where lesbians only exist to be like pretty women for men to ogle at.
Right, and that like if I looked like, I didn't want to say I was a lesbian if I looked like one of those lesbians, and I'm thinking like, you know, like short hair, plaid shirts. I'm wearing a plaid shirt right now. But like... you know, like the sort of 90s image of
like a butch lesbian rather than a femme lesbian.
I didn't want to say that because I felt like I would be negatively portraying this stereotype of like this ugly woman who only liked women because she was ugly, which is obviously completely false on like a number of different horrible patriarchal levels.
Yeah. But it sucks that that shit gets internalized as
well. It really does. And so when I had my first girlfriend, I said I was bi, and all of her friends, she and all of her friends were lesbians, and they were like, you're not really queer. Like,
ooh, so you've like experienced biphobia as a lesbian.
So I remember really specifically, we were sitting in her room one time with a bunch of her friends and they were all lesbians. I'm like, so was I, but I could not deal with that yet properly. And they were going around the room, ranking everyone in the room on how queer they were. Like who's the queerest in this room? And I was at the bottom because they said I liked men. So it made me less queer than anyone else in the room. And I was like, even at the time, I remember being like, it doesn't, and I was dating someone in that room who also was a girl. And he was like, it's not, I don't understand that because that's my girlfriend.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, look at you now.
Yeah.
Fully-fledged lesbian with a wife.
That's so true. And my wife is bi.
Well, there you go. That really sucks.
So I guess, like, I don't know why, just fear, I guess, is the answer to all of the questions about why do people act badly towards other people. But specifically, like, I don't understand biphobia personally because like I guess because I experienced it without being bisexual. but it was very much like, I guess that's the only time that's the thing that I had to deal with in terms of like working out my sexuality for myself. It was putting the label with the feeling because I was like, I can't say I'm a lesbian because of, you know, all of the reasons that aren't reasons and didn't make sense, including like, but I find men, some men, like I want to look at some of them, like some men I find aesthetically appealing.
Yeah. I love the term aesthetic attraction for that.
That's basically it. And I had like, I'd never heard of the term aesthetic attraction. And I think I was dating my wife, which was my girlfriend at the time. And she basically had to be like, look, do you want to have sex with any of these men? Like, would you really, like, think about, like, them, like, touching you? You touching them? They're shirtless. And I was like, oh, God, no!
There you go. That's the test.
Yeah, and I had genuinely just never thought about it because, obviously, I had thought about sex with women a whole bunch and I'd just been like, I find men a certain genre of men, like... physically appeal, like not physically appealing, aesthetically. It, like I describe it as very much like it's like when you see art. It is that because I'm like, that is nice. that's good to look at. I don't want to do anything else with it. You just want to look at it.
Sometimes I find that the men who I am the most aesthetically attracted to are the ones that I am not romantically or sexually attracted to at all. But maybe that's because so cool. I'm intimidated by their beauty. I'm not sure. I'm just like, you're unattainable. I'll just be aesthetically attracted to you.
That's so cool. You know, because I'm like, you have been chiseled beautifully for me to look at, like a beautiful marble statue. No, don't like come near me. Don't be real.
You're just like, no.
Back over there.
Waste of time. Yeah, stay far away.
Far away. But like, maybe if you could just catch the light in a certain way, that would be great.
Oh, I love it. Somebody actually asked, what was the number one thing a partner did to make you feel comfortable with your disability? Coming back to the ME stuff again.
I can't pinpoint one thing that... So the girl I was dating in Cambridge broke up with me because I, quote, wasn't managing my condition, end quote. Well enough, whatever that means.
Sounds like you got fired. That's like
I got fired from being a girlfriend.
That sounds like a really formal reason.
Yeah. So sorry to the cafe Nero opposite King's College, but like that's the breakup Nero.
Oh.
But then my wife, I can't say one thing that she's done because it's all of them. She reacted to my being sick in a way that I didn't know people would or could.
Were you already together when your ME, like when it got bad again?
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we met while I was sort of on the up from my worst bout around my A-levels. We met when I was on the incline. And then so we started dating in the period of time where I was like mostly okay, apart from those like one-offs.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were married when the like this bout really took hold. And I was like, oh my God, she's like been really supportive while it's just been occasional, but like, what if she didn't sign up to marry like a sick person? Like, what if this is too much? And she was just like, stop being ridiculous. But yeah, I think having someone who saw me when I was sick and said that I was sick is one of the best things that she's done for me, because so much of ME is not being believed, or that's been my experience. Like, doctors don't take it seriously. People you like that aren't doctors don't take it seriously. Family members thought that I was faking for ages. My school basically said I wasn't sick and that I just needed to work harder. Like that I was just like skiving. That's what everyone at school said. So my entire experience of ME had been like, it wasn't real. Like maybe I was making it all up because no one else said it was real.
Yeah. And if nobody believes you and they don't treat you like a sick person, then they're going to have expectations for you.
It was very much that I was being held to healthy expectations while being unable to meet them. But then I would hold myself to those expectations because that's what people said I should do.
Mm-hmm.
Apart from one doctor who was lovely, no one else.
I feel like so many people who have like a chronic illness or a disability have that experience of like all of the doctors except one.
Yes.
Who was great, the one who believed me and got me on like track for like a proper diagnosis or treatment or whatever. It's like all doctors are crap except this one.
Yes, all of them are terrible except this one who was excellent. So saying that I was sick when I'd be like, I'm fine, and she's like, no you're not. What are you doing? So partially just believing me without me even asking if she believed me. Like, it wasn't ever a question. She was just already confirming that outside of my my own experience.
I guess also, even if you don't want to confirm it yourself as well.
By the time I said, I think I'm having an ME relapse, she was like, uh-huh. And then was like, wait, you haven't noticed.
She's like, yeah, I knew that weeks ago.
Yeah, and, you know, she meant it in the most loving way. Yeah. She was just like, oh, I really thought that you had noticed. And I was like, no, not at all. I've been in denial. So that, and I think just like she takes it seriously without making me feel like a sick person, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because like, there's a risk of kind of feeling infantilized as
well. Yeah, like I remember in one of Jesse and Claude's video, Jessica Kellgren Fozard, is it Fozard? Mm-hmm. She was talking about how she and her wife handle this, and it was like sometimes when Jessie's sick, like her wife helps her up the stairs but still like gropes her bum. Mm-hmm. So it's like she's sick but she's still cute, like she's still a wife
treating her like an adult, like a sexual being.
Like it's like, mm-hmm. I'm your wife, we just also have this to do, like this extra, as opposed to like putting you in that like infantilized sick
like carer position. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it's that, like she never makes me feel like I am just a sick person. She, and if I try and refer to myself like that, she gets really angry, which is really nice, because there are days like if I am at my worst when I am like, I am nothing but a burden. Like, I am dragging her down. I am, what good am I contributing to the world, et cetera, et cetera. And she's like, no, today you're just sicker. It's fine. But also, you look cute. Mm-hmm. Thank you. I'm like, I fully do not today, but I will
see,
take
you're
it.
Still adding value to the world.
Yeah. Aesthetically appealing.
So, whilst we're talking about ME, someone else asked, how to feel part of the queer community when dealing with severe ME?
So I have, the community that I would say I am part of is online. Like, mm-hmm. that's where basically all my friends have always been, because I've been mostly in my house since I was about 14. It was more like the community I was in turned out to be queer than...
Surprise!
It was just sort of like I sort of accumulated friends and they were queer rather than... Mm-hmm. I don't know how to feel... I don't know how to feel part of a wider queer community in, like, physical space, because, mm-hmm. like, I can't go to, like, Pride or... like Erin was saying on an episode that went out today but will have been a couple of weeks ago when this is out, with Queerly Autistic, go back and listen to it, it's great.
Plug
Yeah, totally, plug, it's fine, I did the transcript, I'm allowed to plug it too.
And
my experience was very much like hers in that I found my community like through fandom. So I was meeting people through interests, and then a lot of other people who were like, we are queer, but we're not sure what to do with that because we're 15, were also like in the fanish melting pot, sort of working it out. So I guess that's my advice for feeling part of a queer community, is find a separate thing that you love. Go to those online spaces and the queers will flock together.
You'll find each other.
I don't know what it's like to be part of a physical, to meet physically first and have that form the community, because my like little community, we're all, the ones that I spend time with physically are because we all live near each other, because we all moved to London.
And also I think it's worth adding that, like, if you find like specific queer spaces, even if they are online, you're not necessarily going to get on with everybody there,
exactly.
Right? You don't necessarily going to like have the same interests. Whereas, like you said, if you are just involved in online communities or communities that you can access of things that you're interested in, mm-hmm.
you may just find some queer folk along the way.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Like you.
And then you definitely have some shared interests as well.
Rather than say knowing a few queer people through your girlfriend and you don't have anything in common and they think that you're not queer because you're bi. Hypothetically.
Yeah, just a hypothetical situation.
Hypothetical question that I just a hypothetical situation that I've held on to for 12 years.
You just don't want to go back to them, just being like, "I was a lesbian all along.
I was a lesbian the whole time, and I think that you can't quantify gayness, but if you could, I'd be gayer than all of you."
Yeah. Yeah, there is no hierarchy, but I am the gayest.
Yes, hierarchy is bullshit and gold star lesbians are a horrible fake thing that just exists to shame people. But if there was a ranking, I would be much gayer than all of you. Suck it.
Oh, we love bitterness.
Exactly. Just bitter bitterness.
Just let it out. Let it out. It's healthy. Well, Megan, thank you so much for your time, for your hard work on the podcast. Everyone send Megan lots of love. Where can they find you as an individual, not just the podcast, on social media?
If you're looking for me and not the podcast, I'm at Moog Florin on Instagram and sometimes Twitter, and very occasionally the same as a blog, but Instagram is where you'll get me, at Moog Florin.
And if you want the comfy lesbian bookish vibes,
yes,
that is what you'll get there.
Yeah, if you want comfy lesbian book and me yelling about people being gay in books, that's where you'll get it. Plus lots of pictures of my horrible cat, who I love very dearly, but I'm pretty sure is a cryptid.
Oh, bless. What did they ever do to you?
Shit, so many things. Just so many things. Would you like the list?
Maybe blog about it. Put it on your Instagram. The list. List of grievances.
List of grievances. Number one, my cat can jump from a sitting start to the top of a door.
Ooh, that's impressive.
Yeah.
That is really impressive. Well, Megan, thank you so much. I hope you've had a good time on the other side of the microphone on this podcast.
It's been great. Wholeheartedly recommend, if anyone is also asked to be a guest, fully do it. Hannah's the loveliest.
I love it. And thank you all so much for listening. Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to Doing It. If you enjoyed it, I would really appreciate it if you left a rating and a review. You can find show notes at doingitpodcast.co.uk, and do go follow us on social media, and I'll catch you in the next episode. Bye. This was a Global Original podcast.